Visit Plain Ridge Park Casino this spring for all the playoff hoops and hockey action and the return of baseball. They've got the biggest screens, the best food and drink, plus they're giving away Penn Cash bonuses and prizes to Penn Play Rewards members. Not a member? Join today by downloading and registering for the Penn Play app from the App Store. Unlock all the fun, including a chance to win up to $2,000 in Penn Cash. All this and more. Make Plain Ridge Park Casino your spring sports viewing headquarters. Must be 21 plus. Play it smart from the start. Live chat at GameSenseMA.com. Hope is here. 800-327-5050 or GamblingHelplineMA.org.
B-Pod Studios.
No one says it like they do.
What do you mean?
Well, what do you mean?
Felger and Mads.
I'm just making it up. Totally making it up.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
All right, hour number three, Felger Mads here at 4:03 in the afternoon. I do want to get to something about Bill Belichick, because I've said many, many times I want to go forward with Bill. If it's between Brady or Bill, I'm going forward with Bill. I want Bill to pick the next quarterback. I want Bill to retool the team. I want him to get, you know, set them down the runway of the next iteration of the New England Patriots, and that's super important to me. And if there is a choice to be made between Brady, Belichick, I stick with Belichick. So Bill, Belichick is what I've been, spouting here for at least a year, I would say. But I'm going to ask myself and have you ask me a question and ask everybody, am I putting too much faith in Belichick? Is Belichick's recent track record worthy of me being so over the top, you know, trusting of him and his spot? So I do want to get to that, but I do want to clear these phones out first, because a lot of you have been waiting patiently. So we'll do that in a second. First, it's you, Mike in the car. Go ahead, Mike.
Hey, Felger, Masvidal, how we doing? First things first, about 20 minutes ago, how big's your playbook, Maz?
Yeah, I'm going to let you go.
That was the right call.
I knew that wasn't going where we wanted it to go. We've got Chad in Groveland. He's going to join us next on Felger, Maz. Hi, Chad.
Hi, I want to talk about the greatest offense ever that can happen. Screw the Chargers. Josh McDaniels, Brady to the Browns, OBJ, Landry, sign AB, Gronk out of retirement, Chubb, Hunt, and that defense. They've stunk for 50 years.
He's not going to Cleveland. And they're not going to sign Antonio Brown on top of Odell Beckham, et cetera, et cetera.
And Gronk's still under contract here.
So they'd have to trade for him. So let's just keep it on planet Earth, all right? Let's not get too silly. Mike in the truck, go.
Yeah, I had called in yesterday and said that I'd like to see the Ravens and the Niners in the Super Bowl, and you guys mentioned that we could have had either of those quarterbacks as successors to Brady. And it almost made me gag to think that we could have had Lamar Jackson, which I would have been glad to take as a successor to Brady. Instead, we got Sony Suck and Blow Michelle, who, by the way, had 300 less rushing yards this season than Lamar Jackson. Puke.
So I'm telling you, Mike, when Murray brought this up in the middle of the year, I totally forgotten about you passing on Jackson and how it was really on the table. When I say on the table, you were right in range to do it. That was the perfect time to take him. The last couple picks of the first round, where you get a fifth-year rookie option. So if the player doesn't work out, it's not the worst thing in the world that you spent 31 or 32 on him. It's not like a total bust or blown pick. And if he does hit, you have tremendous contractual and money leverage on the player because of the rules with the rookie fifth-year option. So I thought when they were on the board there at 31 a couple of years ago, I thought, here we go with Lamar Jackson.
So did I.
Especially when Josh McDaniels had visited him twice, given him a personal workout. Brady had given him the old sausage emoji on the old Instagram there. So I sort of thought Lamar Jackson, you know, might have been the guy there. Instead, the Pats pass. They take Sony Michel. Baltimore trades up to 32 to exactly what I just said, get the guy with the last pick of the first round. And there you go. And I said at the time that if Lamar Jackson turns into the guy, if he turns into Michael Jordan, we're going to talk about that as a miss by the Patriots. We're not there yet, by the way, because I still think if I'm betting it, Lamar Jackson's going to lose in the next couple weeks. He's going to get hurt next year, and he's never going to fulfill it, just like Mike Vick never fulfilled it, just like none of those guys ever fulfill it. He's the latest unstoppable flash-in-the-pan force, but that's all he'll ever be.
Yeah, we have to play it out, but as of right now, it feels like a whiff.
Well, there are also two parts of that story. One is Jackson, but the other's Michelle. What's Michelle going to be?
So, like, yes.
Honestly, if I were the Patriots at this stage, I would trade Michelle. You know, he's 2 years in.
What are you going to get?
Well, okay, but maybe someone out there takes the cheese.
But to me, it's not so much about what that pick was, because no matter what it was, if Lamar Jackson turns out to be the next guy,
well, then that's doubly bad.
The next guy in the league? Then it's like it doesn't matter who you took. You took the wrong guy.
Right. But I'm telling you, it could be doubly bad. Not only that, you took a running back who's average at best.
Just a guy. Who's just a guy. So, yeah, we'll have our eye on that. And the caller's right. If the Super Bowl is Garoppolo and Lamar Jackson, you're looking at the two guys you had that you had in your sights or even in your building to be the next guy.
Coming up in February on Felger and Mass.
It is. At Super Bowl week, if it's Niners-Ravens. Dylan in Boston. Hi, Dylan.
Hey, so about Edelman being back to catch that punt, being on the 50-yard line, there's no pass interference on fake punts. So he could have been on, like, the 30-yard line, and if he saw it was going to be a fake, he could have went and lit up the gunner, and it wouldn't have been a problem.
That's true. That happened in a game here down the stretch. I can't remember which one it was. It was a New Orleans game towards the end of the year.
I remember that play on the sideline.
Another one where the New Orleans fans are like, you know, the league's screwing us. No, you can't have PI on the gunner. You're allowed to mug the gunner all the way down, even with the balls in the air.
I mean, seriously, like, not to get on that road again, but Saints fans, like, who are you going to bitch at it now?
Okay, but on not having Edelman back there, it's like...
It was costly. It was costly.
I mean, it was a desperation either way. So it's kind of pointless to spend too much time on it. But that wasn't the right play. The right play was have him back there to fair catch it. You're probably not going to get a return. It's right. But back there to fair catch it to save you time and field position. And they probably would have had time for another play than they had and 20 more yards.
Yeah, a better shot of trying to get, you know, the field goal there. Instead, it goes essentially down to the one, almost ensuring that pick six to happen.
Yeah, and again, maybe you get in a spot where actually you can chuck a Hail Mary up from the 50 if you get out to midfield.
Oh, we just rewatching the game. I'd forgotten this. Remember how Tennessee handled the Hail Mary at the end of the first half? They rushed nobody.
Yes, right.
They rushed nobody.
Right, that's right.
And the Pats had a real good look at that Hail Mary at the end of the first half.
They did.
You can't do that.
No, that's right. In fact, they could have got another crack at it. They really could have.
So if they had had Edelman back there to fair catch, you would have gotten the ball at the 25 with about 20 seconds left, which is time to get it to midfield, which is then a Hail Mary. And if Rabel was going to play it the same way, give Brady all day to how much time as he wanted to stay back there and put the ball perfectly in the end zone, you have a shot. They had a shot on that one in the first half.
The Patriots still have a timeout at that stage?
No.
Done. Okay, but you know what? With 25, so which part of the reason I'm asking, 25 seconds, if you might be able to throw in the middle of the field.
Yes.
Run up and clock it.
I don't know about that. But anyway, all I'm saying is I just, that was not the right play, and it felt that way at the time. Steven Portland, what do you got?
Hey, just a quick take and a follow-up question. So basically everything with the offense started with the offensive line, then it trickles down to the wide receivers, and if they were a veteran group, you know, they have to be quick and precise. But it all goes back to the offseason OTAs. I think Belichick would want Brady back if he bought in and he didn't undermine his plan. So my question to you is, if he does come back and go somewhere else, is Brady all in?
Okay, that's my question. That's my question. If you're not all in, especially here, we can see which way it's going. You not showing up in the offseason, you not trusting or investing in the players around you, and I'm not saying you're not justified. Like, okay, maybe N'Keal Harry sucks and Jacoby Myers sucks and they're not worth your, but the point is, you don't like them, you don't believe in them, you don't trust them, you don't put in the work with them like other quarterbacks do. So why would you come back just to keep doing this? Why would the team want you back to keep doing this?
I mean, look, it's
not working.
I understand the sentimentality factor, and I understand that we're in a different case here with Brady. But the idea that Bill would want Brady back at this stage, given what it is to me, flies in the face of everything Belichick has ever done. He drafted Garoppolo 5 years ago, for crying out loud. He was ready to make the move then. That aside, what happened when Gronk started to check out? He tried to trade his ass. What happened when some of the other guys started getting long, you know, older and longer in the tooth? He let Welker go. He traded Mankins. He traded Seymour. Like, he shipped all these guys out of town. So all of a sudden now he still wants him back? So again, I recognize it's Brady. I recognize it's a different case. But if you're asking me, Bill is sitting there, and when he's by himself making the analysis, he says, we're better off if he goes. I believe that Belichick deep down, and Kraft for that matter, really don't want him to come back.
Tom in Newton. Hi, Tom.
Yeah, hey, guys, just got a couple of quick questions for you on Bill Belichick. His press conference the other day when the reporter asked him about, you know, oh, you know, what do you think about your fans that have been with you through thick and thin? And he goes, oh, well, you know, I don't think there's been a lot of thin around here. I mean, look, it's not like he said anything wrong. I mean, he's right. But since when has Bill Belichick ever been known to, like, say stuff like that? I mean, it sounds like something Bobby Knight would say.
No, you know, it's
the point I had real quick.
No, let me stop you there. It's just another thing of what Bedard was talking about earlier. It's a good call, Tom. Thank you for it.
You get a little defensive there, didn't he?
Sensi. Like, Jimmy, do you have it? It's the question from the same gal. This one gal kept asking these guys about, what do you say to the fans? Really annoying question, but we got good answers out of it, so I guess not that annoying.
I know this.
Go ahead.
I know this is a disappointing evening for you, but Pat's Nation, your fans, have stuck with you through thick and thin. Social media, they still love you. Do you have any message for the fans who are so supportive of you and the team?
Yeah, we appreciate our fans. I wouldn't say it's been all that thin around here personally. Maybe you feel differently, but I haven't heard too many fans say that. So, yeah, of course we appreciate our fans. That's, you know, we have a great relationship with them. They're here for us, and we always try to perform our best so they can be proud of the way we perform.
Okay. When I heard the answer, I'm like, what is he? Because
it's a figure of speech,
yeah,
baby.
It's just a figure. I didn't even notice her saying it. The fans being with you through thick and thin. I had to go back and read the transcript. She mentioned something about being with you through thick and thin.
It's an expression.
She didn't mean anything by it. It's just words, cliche. But Bill, like, immediately, I want to know how thin it's been. It's like, I can't use the word. I can't even use the word on the off-air show anymore, unfortunately.
Yeah. We had to put soap in our mouths.
No, you can't use that word anywhere.
Well,
in Britain.
But there's a word to use for what has become the whole Patriots experience, which is, you hear what he said? Oh, what did you say? Oh, that didn't age well. Like the players, the coach, like, God. Well, how could you have accomplished so much and be so good and still be so freaking sensitive to just commentary in the ether? Like, and that question, what do you say to your fans who've been with you through thick and thin? Well, I don't know how thin it's been. I don't know how you feel about it.
I can give you a few thin experiences.
My God.
Spygate.
Could you be? But.
Fans stuck with him through that stuff. I consider that some of the thin stuff.
But this isn't the point.
I know it isn't the point.
That he even noticed that she said it.
Yeah, right. Because he's a baby. He's a bad loser.
They've all become babies. You've all become babies. The players, the coach, never mind the fans, which I expect, which is part of the experience. I get it. But it's permeated into the locker room of the players and the coaches.
Like, he looked at her as, like, unknown reporter, and I still don't know if anyone has actually identified her. It's like, oh, you're trying to take a shot at me and what I've done here over the last 20 years? It's like, no. Again, it was just a figure of speech.
Yeah, I think Bill's always had that in him. I don't think that one, you know, some of the players, that stuff, no question, it spilled in there. But Bill's always been that way. He's always been that way to focus. What do you mean thin?
Like, you didn't mean anything, but it's just an expression, Bill.
It's totally him, though. He totally is. He's always done that.
It's become the whole Patriots experience. Toughen up, for the love of Pete.
Through thick and thin.
God. Okay. Have I put too much faith in Bill Belichick going forward? We address that right after these words.
Visit Plain Ridge Park Casino this spring for all the playoff hoops and hockey action and the return of baseball. They've got the biggest screens, the best food and drink, plus they're giving away Penn Cash bonuses and prizes to Penn Play Rewards members. Not a member? Join today by downloading and registering for the Penn Play app from the App Store. Unlock all the fun, including a chance to win up to $2,000 in Penn Cash. All this and more. Make Plain Ridge Park Casino your spring sports viewing headquarters. Must be 21 plus. Play it smart from the start. Live chat at GameSenseMA.com. Hope is here. 800-327-5050 or Gambling Help.
The Doug Flutie Jr. Foundation for Autism is proud to be the presenting sponsor of the Boston Marathon's Adaptive Program for Runners, creating opportunities for runners with autism and other disabilities to participate in the legendary Boston Marathon.
Hi, my name is Mike Palmer, and I'm running as a member of the Adaptive Program for Runners in this year's Boston Marathon. Thanks to the Flutie Foundation, runners like me can achieve their dreams and finish the greatest race in the world.
The Flutie Foundation promotes inclusion for all to help everyone achieve their running dreams in Boston and beyond. Visit FlutieFoundation.org to get involved.
You're listening to Felger and Mass.
Doesn't always have to be ha ha hee hee.
Oh, love it.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
looking backwards, how would you assess your offense, particularly the last few weeks of the season?
Yeah, well, I mean, we've talked about this through the course of the year. I mean, look, there's scored, you know, a high number of points. There are times where it was in all three phases of the game. There are times when things were good, and there were other times where they were average, and other times they weren't so good. So there are a lot of things that, you know, we'd like to improve on. And that's, again, I think you say that pretty much in every year. Several very, very close games, games that came down to the last, next to last possession in our season, especially the games that we lost in the Baltimore game. And, you know, play here, play there, call here, call there, decision here, decision there. And, you know, things might look a little different, but they didn't, you know, and that's what it is.
So again, that's Belichick. I don't love the answers because it's he's passing the buck there a little bit. He goes back to the we've had four really close games that came down to the last possession, which is implying what? Which is saying our record isn't what it should be. We should be 15-1 or something. Like what is he saying?
Yeah,
when they win Super Bowls, it's the same thing. They're winning Super Bowls on the last possession. They're winning playoff games on the last possession. They're winning playoff games in overtime. They're, you know, like.
No, you got it right. It's a cop-out.
So, I mean, I don't hear him talking about the, you know, we won the AFC Championship game on the last possession because of flip of the coin. But that's sort of what he's implying with these losses. What, because.
It was anyone's game.
Yeah, but yeah, because they ruled N'Keal Harry out of bounds against KC, you actually would have won that game, and so our offense is good enough? Like, that's what he's sort of implying.
Yeah, it's a cop-out again, and I look at it in these simple terms. Like, a few weeks ago when we were assessing the, you know, and I don't know how many weeks I'm going back now, but when you assess the landscape of the conference, I think at one point we said, you know, I'm not sure the Patriots are the fourth or fifth best team in the conference or even the league. Whatever, take your pick. And you look back on it, four teams in the AFC playoffs that are left. They went 0-4. They lost them all.
But we played a number of close games that came down to the last possession. I mean, that's what losing teams say. So I don't know. I feel like that's a cop-out.
It is a cop-out because, again, they pride themselves on being the team that makes that play.
And he also mentions we scored a lot of points. You know, just to remind you that they were seventh in the league in points. Seventh. So we scored a lot of points and we had a lot of games that came down. So this is all, I think, him deflecting from his massive personnel failures on offense.
No question.
And make no mistake, they were big. He failed on offense. Now, I don't think it was intentional. This is where I'll break from like Gasper or Bedard or others who want to sort of really go all in for Brady. They'll say Belichick purposely left him high and dry to make him look bad, which I do not.
If he was trying to do that, he would never have tried to bring in someone like Antonio Brown.
Or trade for Mohamed Sanu. Okay,
right.
So Bill categorically tried to surround Brady. He just failed epically. I mean,
even drafting N'Keal Harry so far looks like a failure.
N'Keal Harry looks like a draft miss, if not a bust, but a big miss. Sanu was an abject failure. Antonio Brown was a complete debacle.
Oh, that was a huge mistake. What a mistake that was from the beginning.
But ultimately on Brown for his inability to put the damn phone down.
Well, I don't know. If you bring a guy like that in, if you lay down with a dog and get fleas, is, you know, you're partly responsible for laying down with the dog. So I put that on the team too. They should have known what they were getting. They took the risk. That's the risk. They knew what so no, it's not all on Brown. It's on the team for bringing him in, giving him that money, giving him that contract. Oh my God. Ridiculous. They're still on the hook for $10 million to that guy. All right. So Sanu fail, Harry fail, Antonio Brown fail. Never mind the offseason insanity of the kid without the hamstring and the big stiff from Washington. I even forget all their names.
Yeah, Maurice something.
Harris.
Maurice Harris, Dontrell Ellington. Inman.
One of them was Ellington.
There's Ellington. That was the little kid without the hamstring. Inman. All those jokers.
Demaryius Thomas, you said that?
Okay, I did not say Demaryius Thomas. They trade Demaryius Thomas. They start off the year with Gunnar Olszewski. Where the hell is he right now?
He ended up on IR.
Okay, so I can't even remember what happened to him.
Jared Cook.
The tight end thing was an absolute disaster. They came into the year with no tight ends, and they end with no tight ends. I'm sorry.
From what I understand, Brady was agitated at that one, too. But he wanted Cook. And they, you know, they didn't make the deal. And I think that sort of started, I shouldn't say started, but contributed to Brady's angst.
So again, blame his buddy, Gronkowski.
Right.
But then again, I would say blame the team for not putting a harder deadline on Gronkowski so they could have gotten to Cook faster. It all goes back to their personnel moves on offense.
Absolutely.
Fail. F, 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 F. Fail on offense.
They were short. No question about it.
Okay. They tried and they failed. They swung and they missed. Am I putting too much faith in Bill Belichick, Murray?
Yeah, I think you are. You know, you keep saying like, oh, I want him to be the guy that, you know, selects the next quarterback. And I understand that. But if you look at just the recent drafts over the last 3 or 4 years, I think you should have some doubts at the very least. And I know it's probably too early to look at the 2019 draft, but and we don't know anything about Jared Stidham. And maybe he becomes the next guy. I personally don't think so. I think he's going to be more of a mobile Brian Hoyer. That's not good enough. But you got to already look at guys like Gardner Minshew in Jacksonville, who might end up becoming something, or, you know, a decent enough starter, a good starter, maybe even Will Greer in Carolina. But it's too early for 2019. But if you look at 2018, where they take Danny Etling late, but a quarterback prospect, they also use that pick at Sony Michel at 31. If Lamar Jackson and the Ravens end up going on and winning the Super Bowl this year, like, it's already ironclad fact. You missed out. You missed out on Lamar Jackson. Maybe Mason Rudolph ends up becoming something. He ended up getting really dinged up with the Steelers. Again, a guy I don't believe in, but keep an eye on Mason Rudolph going forward because he got drafted at 76 in 2018. You take Duke Dawson at 56. So, I don't know. I just think when it comes to quarterbacks, I think Bill, like everybody else, is just hoping to get lucky. You get lucky with a quarterback. It's the football equivalent of like hitting the lottery.
Well, you have one more. They took Jacoby Brissett at 91.
Oh, in 2016, yeah.
Which was a good pick, but,
well,
a guy who went 44 picks later.
Yeah, 135 overall. It's Dak Prescott. And you end up selecting guys like Vincent Valentine at 96 overall and Malcolm Mitchell, who helped contribute to that title against the Falcons, but, you know, lasted a year essentially with his knee injury, and he had the knee injury in college. Like, Prescott's another guy you got to look at and say, well, if he's such a genius and he knows everything and you trust him to take the next quarterback, well, you missed out on him too.
I mean, I don't look. We've asked the question before, like Brady skipping the OTAs, right? Brady's not quite as invested as he used to be. Is Bill? I mean, where was he belly flopping in the Caribbean last year? Although that was no, I'm asking. I don't remember where he was, but remember the pictures?
Yeah,
sure.
Well, he was going seriously pulling the walrus routine in the Caribbean, going belly up for crying out loud in the water. I'm only half joking for crying out loud. Like I look at him. When's the last time he had a good draft? 2014?
So this is another thing.
That was the year we got Tooney and Mason.
Drafts have been scary. Drafts have been scary.
I mean, really? Like, I have it in front of me again. Starting in 2016, just in the first three rounds, Cyrus Jones, Tooney, Brissett, Valentine. I guess you give them that one because of Brissett. But again, they traded him away for Philip Dorsett. So did you really get return on that? And then the next year, Derek Rivers, Antonio Garcia, Dietrich Wise, who's been a negative, Connor McDermott. And then we know the last two, right? Isaiah Wynn hasn't. I bet you Isaiah Wynn, by the way, ends up at left guard. Tooney leaves and he moves there, and they go get a left tackle. I'm willing. So they spent that pick on a guard.
I'm willing to bet, what he was in college.
Well, I'm willing to bet it comes out that way. Yeah. I'm willing to bet that Isaiah Wynn ends up at left guard and they let Tooney go.
Drafts have been scary. And I've gotten into some of these preseasons where I've looked at it and said, oh, actually, I like the direction. It's like I think they've been close to teetering the other way where you say, no, they've actually drafted well, but now as I'm sitting here today, it doesn't feel so good.
No, it just really, again, those first rounders, man, those have hurt. And it's too early on Harry, and maybe, you know, Juwan Williams ends up half decent. But, man, you look at some of the ones you get down in, like even last year, 18, after winning Michelle, Duke Dawson, cut, Bentley, backwards, Christian Sam, Berrios gone, Etling gone, Keon Crossan traded, Izzo IR.
Who'd you rather have as a GM?
I mean,
he's as flawed as anybody else. So.
Yeah. So listen, I'm not saying get rid of him.
I've had a problem with this over the years because I think Bill's had his ups and downs personnel-wise like everybody else. He's human.
My question is, at this point, and especially looking at these last three drafts, are you listening to everyone in the room come draft time and on draft night? Like, if Josh McDaniels, well, now it looks like he's going to be out, but if he was going to be here and he really believed in Lamar Jackson, I don't know, like maybe, can you maybe listen, maybe do a little bit more homework? Maybe you'll be convinced or have Josh help you convince, yes, we should have him as our project quarterback behind Brady going forward. It just feels to me like there's a stubbornness factor going on with Belichick in recent years with that draft.
So, I don't know, can I say Ozzie Newsome, even though he's not really doing it anymore?
He's gone, yeah.
I know, but I mean, they historically draft well. How about Pittsburgh?
Yeah, and I think Schneider in Seattle has a nice track record.
Pittsburgh drafts well. I mean, there's a few places that I would say do it better than anybody.
All I'm saying is, like, you know, when we talk this way about Brady, there's two or three guys in the league you'd say, yeah, I'd take him. I might take him over Brady. I'll take him right with Brady. There are years you'd say Brady or Rodgers. Either way, you're going to be great. Now you say you'd take Mahomes over him. So that you've been able to do that with Brady over the years. At GM, it's like flavor of the month. But I can't give you someone over a prolonged period of time that I'd say I'd have over Bill. And even right now, as I'm saying right now, right this second, who would I take over Bill? I don't think I would. And I certainly know there's no coach I'd rather take. So I'm happy to pick apart the flaws and second guess the misses, and we'll do it the rest of the day if you want. We'll do it all off season if you want. I still think I want to make in all the calls.
Yeah, ultimately, and I'm with you. And best coach in the league, hands down. Him, and then precipitous drop to everybody else, even peers like Andy Reid or Pete. But at GM, like you've said before, he's average at best, especially recently. These last three drafts, he's had a cold run at the table.
So he's had a bad year or so. Drafting has gone back for longer than a year. Personnel-wise, this year was a bad one. Offensively, it was a killer, frankly. It was a killer going Mohamed Sanu over Manny Sanders.
Second-round pick.
Second-round pick for that when Manny Sanders is sitting there for less. That's a big whiff. And it looks like N'Keal Harry, at least in year one, N'Keal Harry versus DK Metcalf, Debo, well, Samuel was before him, but I don't know. There's this whole litany of guys who were taken after him. Big miss. What he did at tight end should be criminal.
Yeah.
I mean.
But even for the hits that you can build, well, Kyle Van Noy, you know, he's taken a stone.
Defense.
And there's always going to be guys like that. Even John Simon, I think, you know, that's a guy that was kind of a diamond in the rough. But for that, I'll also say he wasted two draft picks on someone like Cassius Marsh and then signed someone like Mike Gillisley, who I was high on at the time, but he ended up sucking. Coney Ealy, that was a waste.
I don't second guess him defensively. I think defensively he's been pretty good. He's made a bunch of good decisions even recently. So. No, the defense was overrated, but that doesn't mean it sucks. That doesn't mean they blew the personnel moves on defense.
Okay, but I'll tell you where I do blame them on the defense. They didn't really have a defensive coordinator. If he was the guy running it, they got worse. The coaching on defense, I don't think, got better.
Okay, different story. Different question. As a GM, I think he's done well defensively, very well. Offensively, he had a bad year. No doubt about it. But just quickly on the drafting the quarterback things, Murray, I look at in the last, whatever this is now, 5-6 years, he's drafted Garoppolo, Brissett, who's an NFL quarterback, maybe not great, but at 91, I think he did well there. And I think Stidham can play, and if he can, he's drafted, you know, three guys who can start in the league in the middle of the draft. That's not easy.
Ryan Mallett popped.
Ah, that was much earlier.
Yeah, much earlier. I'm
first round arm talent.
I know your original question was, do you still have faith in Belichick? And my answer is yes.
My question is, am I putting too much faith in him?
Okay. And I would say...
I think so. I think it's more of a roll of the dice than anything else at QB.
Look, relative to anyone else, I still think I have enough faith in him. So, but it's... I don't know. Maybe it's slipping a little there.
Okay, back to your thoughts. After Murray's update, the latest, there was breaking news in the NFL today that was surprising, and it relates to the Patriots. It impacts the Patriots, and here it is in the update.
Visit Plain Ridge Park Casino this spring for all the playoff hoops and hockey action and the return of baseball. They've got the biggest screens, the best food and drink, plus they're giving away Penn cash bonuses and prizes to Penn Play Rewards members. Not a member? Join today by downloading and registering for the Penn Play app from the App Store. Unlock all the fun, including a chance to win up to $2,000 in Penn cash. All this and more. Make Plain Ridge Park Casino your spring sports viewing headquarters. Must be 21 plus. Play it smart from the start. Live chat at GameSenseMA.com. Hope is here. 800-327-5050 or gambling. HelplineMA.org.
The Doug Flutie Jr. Foundation for Autism is proud to be the presenting sponsor of the Boston Marathon's Adaptive Program for Runners, creating opportunities for runners with autism and other disabilities to participate in the legendary Boston Marathon.
Hi, my name is Eric Fishman, and I'm running as a member of the Adaptive Program for Runners in this year's Boston Marathon. Thanks to the Flutie Foundation, runners like me can achieve their dreams and finish the greatest race in the world.
Woo! The Flutie Foundation promotes inclusion for all to help everyone achieve their running dreams in Boston and beyond. Visit FlutieFoundation.org to get involved.
Sometimes they're hot on the topic.
Yes!
No!
Yes!
No!
Yes!
Felger and Maz, 98.5, The Sports Hub.
All right, back to your calls as promised here on Felger and Maz. Eddie in the truck, lead us off this segment. Hi.
How you doing, guys? I just want to start off by talking about Tom Brady and his future. If I put myself in his shoes, and I know that, you know, I grew up in California. I had West Coast roots. I played 20 years for the greatest organization in sports. But do I want to give a little bit back to maybe a team that I favored, where I grew up. And honestly, I mean, I think it's not going to work out here, fam, because whenever it gets like two people in the elite at what they do start doing things to get back at each other, like, oh, I did this and you did that, that never works out.
So I'm going to agree with that second part. It feels like for it to work here, someone has to reverse course, you know, pretty good. And I just don't know if they're at that place where they can do it. Like, again, it's not really working the way it is. He's not being paid what he wants to be paid. He doesn't like what he's being surrounded by. The team probably isn't happy with his commitment level or his level of play. What's really going to change next year? Are they suddenly going to turn around and pay him? I mean, hopefully the weapons and the offense improves around him, but they're not going to suddenly pay him. And if they're not going to suddenly pay him, why would he suddenly start showing up where he wasn't showing up? You're still going to have to deal with new players, new coaches, the whole thing.
Yeah, I just don't see where all of a sudden, again, it gets back on track and everything's fine again. I just think, you know, over 20 years, you start to diverge.
Okay, the first thing, to go back to California to repay where he's from?
I don't think that that's a relevant part of it at all.
0.0.
Although you linked to a story this morning in The Athletic where, you know, some executives throughout the league assessed sort of the whole Brady situation. And I thought one guy made what I thought was a pretty pertinent point, which is, what if Brady is now like one of these NBA guys who has his rings? Okay, what if he's like a Durant? You know, and he decides, well, I got my rings now. I don't have to ring chase anymore.
Right.
In the case of Brady, he's got six titles. He's not chasing anybody anymore. He's got it all wrapped up.
So I can do it for other factors.
Right. Which is like, you know what? I'd rather go play in Southern California, enjoy myself a little bit, and set up TB12. Okay, that's more important to me. And the environment's better. It'll be a little more relaxing. I'm not playing for Bill anymore. And so the priorities change.
Right.
Again, whatever direction they change in, they change. Is because who's he chasing now? Nobody.
No, I think
I still think that seventh ring would mean something to him to get past Jordan. I think that that's still a factor.
Yeah, I think
not as big as setting up TB12 in other places like LA.
I hope just for entertainment purposes that he's motivated to prove it to Bill and the Patriots that he's still got it. Like that'd be great if we get the best out of Brady, even if he's an LA Charger. I'm just saying it's not because it's in California. He would go to LA because it's best for his business or his family.
Absolutely.
So just like Durant and Kyrie Irving want to be in New York for things other than winning or basketball.
Right, the boardroom.
The boardroom, their off-court interests, business, the fact that it's close to where Kyrie kind of grew up-ish, although I still don't get what Brooklyn has to do with Jersey.
Me
but
either.
You know what I mean? So, like, they went there for reasons other than best place to win a championship or pure basketball. Is Brady in that kind of spot?
So I wonder. I mean, I thought that that was a fair point. Again, I don't know why we don't look at Brady that way. Probably just because he's been so true to the winning concept since the day he got here. But at this stage, what does he have left to win?
Dan in the car, go.
Hey, guys. I just got a quick question. If you could answer it and keep me on, because then I just have a big point. The quick question is Nick Caserio, does he have any say in what Belichick does in the draft day? Because if he does, let him take a hike to Houston like you want to do. And then I'll make my point after that answer, because I've been thinking about that.
No, hey, go ahead. I'll give them both at one time. What's your second thing?
All right. And then the second thing is, you guys mentioned the draft, and I was licking my chops to hop in on that. Because if you look at the past decade, their first round and second round draft picks have been a disaster. Their sixth and seventh were pretty much all last cuts of training camp. They shine. Belichick signs. He shines. I'm sorry. In the third to the fifth round, he picks up these linemen. He picks up.
So let me just stop you there. The first round picks have been woof.
They haven't hit on studs since 2012.
I mean, really, it's been bad there.
2012, Chandler Jones, Dante Hightower. Hit.
Absolutely.
7 years ago. 2013, no first round pick. 2014, Dominic Easley. 2015, Malcolm Brown. 2016, no first round pick. 2017, no first round pick. 2018, Isaiah Wynn and Sony Michel. 2019, N'Keal Harry. Outside of something from Michel last year at the very end, what have they really gotten from any of those picks in this last run?
Not much.
I mean, nothing.
Nothing is right.
And again, Easley, Brown, these guys, nothing.
No, and what's odd, too, is that in the early, you know, in the first half of Belichick's career, he was automatic in the first round, it felt like, wasn't he?
Yes.
Pretty close.
Absolutely.
I mean, really, he was pretty close. Every year in the first round, they get something, pretty much.
So, I'll just give it to you from 2003 going forward. 2003, Ty Warren. 2004, Vince Wilfork, Ben Watson. 2005, Logan Mankins. 2006, Lawrence Maroney.
Yeah.
2007, Brandon Merriweather.
Mm.
2008, Gerard Mayo, home run. 2010, Devin McCourty, ultimately right. 2011, Nate Solder, good pick. 2012, Jones Hightower. Yes, I mean, so he typically had good success in the first
round. Right, and I know you started where you did, but Seymour was there too, right?
Oh, did I miss Seymour? Yeah, 01, yeah. Seymour.
So, you know, it was, I mean, he did well in those years. He would get a good player in the first round.
The first thing on Casario, it's hard to know. I know Casario was like puts in all the work and puts together the board, but something tells you that with the Patriots are on the clock and Bill's in the draft room and his scouts have put in all this work and done all the legwork and set the board and everything's lined up there. And Bill says, no, I don't want that guy. I want this one. And so it's hard to tell whose picks are his and whose are someone else's and who screwed up and who succeeded. Like, I don't know.
Well, to me, at the end of the day, they all go under him. As long as he's here, I have a hard time drawing the line anywhere else. So I get the sense or I get the feeling, and not from any info, just my gut, Casario's gone. He's another one.
His contract goes through the draft, which is weird.
but again, fine. Then he's gone after that.
Well, but why would you want him even in the room, though? You know, if he's got one foot out the door. Just I find that weird.
Well, maybe they can leverage him and try to get compensation for him. Maybe that's what they'll do. You know, that they'll say, no, you can have him before the draft, but you're going to give us something for him.
All right, long commercial-free segment is next. More of your reaction.
Visit Plain Ridge Park Casino this spring for all the playoff hoops and hockey action and the return of baseball. They've got the biggest screens, the best food and drink, plus they're giving away Penn Cash bonuses and prizes to Penn Play Rewards members. Not a member? Join today by downloading and registering for the Penn Play app from the App Store. Unlock all the fun, including a chance to win up to $2,000 in Penn Cash. All this and more. Make Plain Ridge Park Casino your spring sports viewing headquarters. Must be 21 plus. Play it smart from the start. Live chat at GameSenseMA.com. Hope is here. 800-327-5050 or Gambling Helpline. MA.org.
Looking for hope? House of Possibilities offers children and adults with disabilities a path to greater independence. From social to recreational programs to overnight respite and career and community access opportunities, House of Possibilities is changing the way people see disabilities and their program participants see themselves. Visit houseofpossibilities.org to learn more or to support their work. That's houseofpossibilities.org. House of Possibilities. See what belonging can do.
Felger and Mass.
Oh.
98.5, the Sports Hub.
I need to be very, very careful about what I have to say. Joe Judge, if you're watching this show, I've never met this man. I'm not questioning the man's capabilities at all. I know nothing about him, okay? So I want everyone to understand that my criticism, and it is a criticism, of this choice by the New York Giants, who are, they're regressing before our very eyes as a standard in the National Football League. Here's the reason I say this. And again, Mr. Joe Judge, to you and your family, I apologize. These comments are not directed towards him.
Not personal.
It's not directed towards him per se. It's
anybody. Even professionally, because you're not familiar with
his work. I know nothing about him. This is the issue. You're the New York Giants. It's the media capital of the world. It's a franchise that LT was once the face of. Phil Sims, even the Jeff Hostetler, Bill Parcells, Michael Strahan. Are you kidding me? And you come to the New York market, the media capital of the world, this bubble with Joe Judge. I'm not questioning. Yeah. Again, there were other credentials he had before this season.
Yeah.
But remember, it's about what's most frequent. What's most frequent in the mind's eye? You're the one receivers coach of the New England Patriots. What have we been saying all year? They don't have any. They don't have any. Okay.
Again. The man in charge of the worst positional group on the team just got a premier head coaching job in the NFL.
Plum job.
And look, and I'm sort of parsing that because Joe Judge is also the special teams coordinator, and their special teams have been very good over the years. But wow, that is Stephen A. on ESPN. You can understand if you're a Giants fan, it's like, what?
I mean, when this came over, it showed up on my Twitter feed this afternoon. I was like, huh, really? I mean, I know his name was being thrown around, but I didn't think that that was really going to happen anywhere.
I mean, to me, it borderline came out of nowhere. Really. Like, again, I know people were saying Judge could be a candidate. I thought McDaniels might get the Giants job or Cleveland.
Well, he had an interview lined up.
I know. That's the other thing is, like, how about that? Like, before Josh McDaniels even gets there, because his interview, if I remember right, is scheduled for tomorrow.
Correct.
All right, today's Carolina, tomorrow's the Giants.
And they both hired somebody else before he even got on a plane.
Unbelievable.
So now, there's one left?
So, which tells me, doesn't that tell you, though, that McDaniels is probably going to the third one?
Okay.
What if
he doesn't?
Then he's going with Brady to San Diego. I don't rule that out either.
Me neither.
Like, I can see that one that, you know, because there's no way. I mean, is Brady going to go play for Anthony Lynn?
Okay. So this is a huge component to me of if Brady goes somewhere else. It's been floated Vegas, right? Gruden and Brady. That's fun. Like, that'd be a great pairing. And Brady in Vegas with John Gruden. Great. Except Gruden runs this West Coast offense, like a classic old school, from what I understand, West Coast offense, which is totally different than what Brady's been in for 20 years. Brady's not going to go and start over with a whole different system. It has to be his system.
Don't you think Gruden would change it?
So either Gruden has to change something that he's been doing for 30, 40 years, or Brady has to change something he's been doing for 20 years. I just don't feel like, I feel like that's a big impediment, frankly. But I'll tell you what, I to me, it's something that has to be addressed wherever Brady is, even here. Let me just, in this segment, I want to give you two little inside coaching things. Here's one. This Athletic story that we talked about where Mike Sando talked to six executives across the league to give their thoughts on Tom Brady. And he talked to one NFL executive who said that he had a hard time believing Brady would want to learn a new offense elsewhere. Quote, my initial thought is if he comes back to play, he stays there. This executive said, meaning New England. I've been told they bring the other quarterbacks into one room and someone meets with them. And then Brady meets with Josh alone because of all the stuff they've added onto that offense over the years. When you are doing it for 20 years, there is stuff you did back in year five that may come back to you, but the other guys are looking at you like, what the hell are you talking about? So, end quote, which makes perfect sense, right?
Sure, it does.
But there's something not quite functional about that. This sort of lends to everything that I'm talking about. Like, is Brady so far? He's speaking Mandarin Chinese, and the guys that just get here, whether it's receivers or other quarterbacks or everybody else, is just learning the language.
Yeah, alphabet blocks.
Right. And it's like, well, they've got to bridge that somehow. Dumb it down. Get, you know, call the slant, run the slant. Right? Or something, because I think this has gotten in the way from them developing new receivers, getting on the same page with new receivers, and it's become an impediment. It's part of the dysfunctionality I'm talking about on this offense.
Oh, I don't think there's any question. I mean, I felt late in the year that they were asking young players to do things they couldn't do. And so to me, that was the whole point of saying, dumb it down already. Dumb it down.
So Brady and Josh are over here. We're calling this. We're doing this. We're looking at the tapes. They would do this. And everybody else is looking at him like, what are you talking about? I can't follow what you're doing. That's not working. That has to change. So never mind Brady going somewhere else and learning a new system. I think here they have to bring it back a little bit, you know, go back to some basics and force Brady to go. And I don't know if he's equipped to do it.
Well, and the other thing is, because they're going to have to go back to basics, because you're talking about a whole different personnel group. So what standbys does he have to rely on? I told you, I think Edelman is close to cashed. Like, so even if Edelman and Brady are both back here next year, what can you realistically expect from Julian Edelman? Is he going to make it through another whole year and play 20 games, 19 games?
Okay, here's a second inside coaching thing. Greg Bedard was on a podcast with Brad Faxon. He's put this in the email today. He says, yeah, I was on a Brad Faxon podcast. I said, wait a minute. The golfer? The golfing dude? He's like, yeah, I was on with Brad Faxon. I'm like, all right, okay, whatever. And they talked about this detail about Belichick and Vrabel in last year's Super Bowl. All right, so here you go. Here's the clip.
I was on a boat last year going to a really nice place in the Bahamas, a place called Baker's Bay, and Mike Vrabel was on the boat with us. It's a half-an-hour boat ride, and I had met Vrabel when I was living up in Rhode Island, and he had played golf in a celebrity event we had. And Vrabel told me last year, before the Super Bowl against the LA Rams, that Coach Belichick called him almost every single day because the Tennessee Titans ran a similar offense to the Los Angeles Rams. And when they lost to Tennessee on Saturday night and they went across, the coaches went across to shake hands, it's one of those where they barely touch hands and they turn around. But when Belichick wins, it's almost like he has a conversation with the losing coach.
Okay, so he talked about a couple different things there, but the detail that we want to hit on here quickly is that Belichick called Vrabel every day before the Super Bowl last year. All right? The Titans had Matt LaFleur as their offensive coordinator last year. Matt LaFleur is a Sean McVay guy, and they presumably run the same offense or have the same terminology or the same principles or the same roots in their offense. And the LaFleur offense is the McVay offense. It's part of the reason why LaFleur got the job in Green Bay, because he's a McVay guy. You know, anyone who's in McVay's orbit got a job, and LaFleur was the best example of it. But isn't that something? You know, this Rams offense can't be stopped. Can't be stopped. And then they get to the Super Bowl, and Bill holds them to 3 points. And was, as Jimmy pointed out, very concerned about where Sean McVay was on the sidelines to keep eyes on him. I don't know. Isn't that interesting?
Yes.
I mean,
doing his due diligence.
So again, LaFleur was with the Titans. LaFleur, by this point, had already taken the Packers job. So LaFleur was probably out of the building. And Bill called Vrabel every day before that Super Bowl to get all this intel on LaFleur's offense, which is McVay's offense.
I'm telling you, I think this is a big part of what Bill does and Bill's success, is that he doesn't get just, you know, X's and O's and film. And I think he looks at the opposing coach and wants to know who he is, how he thinks. And I mean how he thinks in terms of aggressiveness, conservatism, body language. And then he watches him during the game and says, what are the tells? You know, almost like playing poker. Right? Like you sit across from a guy and say, is he bluffing or has he got a hand? And I think that he studies that stuff. Or Ernie does, one or the other. And he knows to pass it on to Ernie and say, watch out for this during the game. And if you see it, let me know. Otherwise, that clip that we played from the do your job thing at the beginning of the year, where he says, hey, Josh, where's McVay? I can't find McVay. Right? Like, I think that is revealing.
So LaFleur, again, was the quarterback's coach. I'm sorry, offensive coordinator of the Rams in 2017. He was the OC of the Rams in 17, then became OC of the Titans in 18 and got the Packers job. But in 2017, when McVay installed all that stuff, that was LaFleur as the offensive coordinator. You know, McVay was really the guy running the show. But Belichick mining Mike Vrabel for all that intel. That's kind of interesting.
Yeah, I believe that Bill does a lot of that. Because again, I go back to the Seattle Super Bowl. Right, he's watching the other sideline when Seattle's getting ready to either hand it off or throw a pass at the 1 yard line, and he makes a judgment on whether they're in command of the situation or not. And
so I think this is a little different. I think this is like rules of the offense. If we do this, what's your check? If we do that, how does your offense respond? Because again, LaFleur ran the McVay offense.
Sure.
And that means the Titans ran the McVay offense. And so there must be concepts and rules. If we do a six-man line, how do you blah, 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 blah.
But can't you get a lot of that from film?
I don't know, I guess. I thought. I don't know. I just listened to facts in there. That's all. Bedard brought that in, so I thought we'd air that. Okay, your call's on everything after Murray's 90-second update, no commercials.
Visit Plain Ridge Park Casino this spring for all the playoff hoops and hockey action and the return of baseball. They've got the biggest screens, the best food and drink, plus they're giving away Penn cash bonuses and prizes to Penn Play Rewards members. Not a member? Join today by downloading and registering for the Penn Play app from the App Store. Unlock all the fun, including a chance to win up to $2,000 in Penn cash. All this and more. Make Plain Ridge Park Casino your spring sports viewing headquarters. Must be 21 plus. Play it smart from the start. Live chat at GameSenseMA.com. Hope is here, 800-327-5050 or gamblinghelplinema.org.
Looking for hope? House of Possibilities offers children and adults with disabilities a path to greater independence. From social to recreational programs to overnight respite and career and community access opportunities, House of Possibilities is changing the way people see disabilities and their program participants see themselves. Visit houseofpossibilities.org to learn more or to support their work. That's houseofpossibilities.org. House of Possibilities. See what belonging can do.
The Doug Flutie Jr. Foundation for Autism is proud to be the presenting sponsor of the Boston Marathon's Adaptive Program for Runners, creating opportunities for runners with autism and other disabilities to participate in the legendary Boston Marathon.
Hi, my name is Eric Fishman, and I'm running as a member of the Adaptive Program for Runners in this year's Boston Marathon. Thanks to the Flutie Foundation, runners like me can achieve their dreams and finish the greatest race in the world.
Woo! The Flutie Foundation promotes inclusion for all to help everyone achieve their running dreams in Boston and beyond. Visit FlutieFoundation.org to get involved.